Comic Book City, USA, it's Acme Cast number 206. I'm Steven.
This is Riley.
That reminds me, was it you or was it Frank that would always do the intros, like right on top of my intro? This is going back to like Acme Cast. I don't remember what it was, but whenever I would do that.
That's funny.
All right, it's Acme Cast number
106. That was me. I would do your voice.
Yeah,
that was me.
Well, welcome back, Riley. And we have joining us today a very special guest, probably one of the most devoted podcast listeners we've had through our 206 episodes, Mr. Rob Turner.
How's it going?
Rob is also the owner of Out of Step CrossFit on Lee Street. What's the exact address?
1605 West Lee, in between UNCG and the Coliseum.
And so you've probably seen the impact that he's had on my life, but we want to talk about today the impact that comics have had on his life. And I have Riley and Rob here because I remember both of you because, actually, I think it was Matt Engelbert's box, which was like number 168, and Riley was 162, or maybe Matt was 167, but I would remember all three of you because when the new 52 started, all three of you... That was, I think, the first time I'd ever seen you, maybe the night of the Justice League midnight release party.
I think that's the first time I came in there was for the new 52 midnight release.
I had come in a kind of off and on for like a year or so before that because I read like The Walking Dead and maybe like one or two other books.
Sweet Tooth.
Yeah, and I didn't understand how anything worked, and I was always embarrassed to ask for it. I actually do remember one time you helping me when I wanted to start reading The Walking Dead. I was just walking around. And I had no idea how anything was organized. And I walked up to you just, you know, very nonchalant. And I asked like, hey, you know, where's your Walking Dead comics? And you're like, oh, we can see if we have any number one trades over here. And I was like, oh, man, he saw right through me.
What, like I knew you hadn't started?
Yeah. You knew that I had no idea what I was doing. And then whenever I caught up to single issues, I didn't understand how I couldn't just walk up to you and be like, oh, y'all don't have this. How about I order it? Like, it just didn't make sense to me that I couldn't do that. But yeah, I think the midnight release for that Justice League...
New 52.
The New 52 Justice League number one was the first time that we all came in to buy something like brand new.
And that's... kind of where I wanted to start the journey, just because you guys, people don't even realize the impact probably that even Riley and especially Rob had on the way Wednesdays work at this point, because you guys were like, I think you came in and maybe the first week after the Justice League release, you guys were picking up every number one off the shelf, like all 13 of the DC number ones.
Well, I only got about half of them, but Riley and Matt definitely got every single one.
Yeah, looking back, I don't know if that was the smartest thing, but I definitely did do that.
And I think we didn't really know what to expect at that point for the new 52, but it became pretty apparent, you know, by the time you got through the first month and there were some number ones where it's just like, oh, that was not good. Like, what kind of an impact did that have on you guys reading something like, just to throw
Hawk and Dove,
throw books under the bus, Hawk and Dove or Men at War or maybe Blue Beetle or Static Shock at that point? The books that didn't even make it, you know, beyond the first 8 months. What was that like? I mean, I don't understand the point where... you guys wouldn't be like, oh, comics are not good, or at least superhero comics are not good.
I think partially I was just so naive. I was like, you know, maybe it's good. I just don't have the background for it or something like that. So there's a few like underdog books that I was like, you know, like I don't want to read just the mainstream ones. I want to read like Resurrection Man and some of these other ones that aren't, you know,
bad.
aren't being as pushed as much. But that was also not a good decision.
I just remember it didn't make sense to me that comic books might not be good. Like that an issue of something might not be good and that would be okay. Like I didn't have to like everything because up to that point I had only read stuff that like held up because that was all I knew about was stuff that was like kind of old or at least a year or two old at that point. And people were like, oh, you got to read this. You got to read that. So I'm like, oh, you got to read every comic book, I guess. And I think like I definitely fell into like the trap of like the feeling that I guess the big two especially can give you of like if you're not reading everything, you're going to miss out on something. And it took me a while to realize like, yeah, it's all right to not read this or that.
But am I remembering correctly that the first graphic novel that you picked up was The Marquee by Guy Davis? I feel like I heard that at some point.
That was what I read after The Walking Dead. Like I started reading Walking Dead when it was on somewhere in like the mid 60s. Cause I think like it was right after a trade. Maybe that would have been like issue 67, I think was the first issue of The Walking Dead I bought. After that, I read The Marquee, which apparently people say is not really that great.
I mean, I didn't care for it. I tried to read it like a month ago, and I think I didn't even finish the second issue.
Well, I guess I read it however long ago Walking Dead 67 came out. That many months ago was when I read it, and I remember thinking it was like the most incredible thing I'd ever read in my life. I couldn't understand how anything could exist that was that good, but I haven't read it since then. So I don't know. It might not be as good as I remember it.
Riley just read it. That's another wild thing. When you look back, I still think of you guys as like new readers. Like there's so many things that you can throw out there and you guys haven't read it or you wouldn't even think to read it. But you're saying Walking Dead, you were reading it before 67, but that was like, that's half of Walking Dead ago. That you started reading it in single issues, which is crazy and makes it crazier that I'm pretty sure when I first started working at the store and I was like, I can read anything. I'm going to get caught up on everything, which is easier at that point. I think there were 3 Walking Dead trades when I started working at the store. So it's crazy, like just those huge gaps. And it's also one of those things when there aren't as many with you guys jumping in, it's at the new 52.
That was my first like foray into superheroes.
Yeah.
Cause I know like Riley, I guess read comic books when he was a little kid. I never did. So the way that I got into Walking Dead was when I was traveling once I used to be way into old zombie movies and stayed with this guy who was telling me about like, we were just going back and forth about zombie movies. And he was like, oh man, have you ever read The Walking Dead? And I was like, comic books, like, yeah, I don't know. And he was like, no, that's what I said too, but you gotta check it out. And so like, that's why I started reading The Walking Dead. And so I got into like that. And then I thought like Vertigo was golden. Like I didn't think, I remember somebody asked me like, oh, you pretty much only read Vertigo stuff. And I'm like, yeah, duh. Like what else is there to read?
There are the same pitfalls that you guys are talking about with the new 52. I was definitely falling into with Vertigo because I was reading Why the Last Man and 100 Bullets and Fables and I was like, yeah, Vertigo is the best. But then you get into Douglas Rushkoff doing Testament and American Virgin and Brian Azzarello doing Loveless, which are all probably books that, you know, maybe you guys haven't even heard of, and there's a good reason for that. But I was just like, yeah, Vertigo is the best. Well,
I was, you know, I kind of had the same thing too, because Rob, who got me into comics, I think he got me started on, it was The Walking Dead and Preacher, and I thought the same thing. I was like, man.
It was definitely Preacher first, because I remember the day that I found out what Sweet Tooth was the day that, because we were in New York together.
Yeah.
And I got you to get the first Preacher trade, because I was telling you how good it was.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, and so I flew through Preacher, started with Sweet Tooth. I was like, man, like, this stuff is great. And same with Rob. I hadn't started superhero books yet. But then, fast forward a few months, New 52 starts, all that. And so we start picking up single issues, stuff like Saucer Country, and a few other not so great Vertigo books came out. I was like, what?
Yeah, I don't remember what all those $1 number ones would have been then. Probably iZombie might have been around then.
That was wasn't that DC?
iZombie was Vertigo.
Oh, it was. Oh.
But that was before. So, but the one that stands out to me that I was like, it's bad.
Well, I remember you, like, superhero stuff just seemed really intimidating to me because, like, I've always had the mindset of, like, I want to start with a number one and I want to read everything there is to read. And that way I know the whole thing. Like, this is the same mindset of, like, watching a TV series. Like, you know, you wouldn't just start in the middle, duh. So why would you do that on a comic book? So that's why I liked Vertigo series and I liked, like, you know, Image books and stuff. Because there was just a definite starting point and a definite, if not end, there was one story to follow. I know, like, around the time Fear Itself was happening, Riley, like, a little bit before Fear Itself.
Yeah, that was the first Marvel event I did.
Yeah, Riley started reading some Marvel books, and he was trying to explain it to me, and I was just like, man, I'm never going to read that. Like, I would never read that. Like, it was too intimidating. And that's why I think, like, the New 52 was so attractive to me, because I even went to, like, BatmanGraphicNovels.com to try to find out, like, the absolute order to read about Batman.
I definitely tried to find, like, the chronological order to read Batman graphic novels,
right,
which now knowing more about comics is insane.
Yeah.
And at what point did you guys make the connections between, since you knew, like, okay, Preacher is Vertigo, like, I get that, or Walking Dead is Image. At what point did you guys start making the connection between, like, okay, I'm reading Batman, then I should check out American Vampire? Because I remember, I think it was you two, and I know Riley, just cleaned us out of American Vampire back issues.
I definitely came
really
in one
quick.
Day.
And for you, Rob, since you were already reading Sweet Tooth, were you like, oh, okay, I'm definitely going to read Animal Man because this is the same guy?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Jeff Lemire was like my golden boy. You know, I like wanted everything because I love Sweet Tooth so much. And I remember, like, I think, like,
The Nobody, too, was another one you read.
Well, yeah, but that was him as well.
Yeah.
I mean, American Vampire was another one that I think, that was Vertigo, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I think I just tried it because it was Vertigo, and I was like, oh, I'll probably like it. And then I think that was when I realized how, like, back issues worked, because I got the first American Vampire hardcover, and it was before there was anything released past that, like, collected. And I remember coming in trying to get issues, and, like, you guys didn't have one. And then that was when I realized how, like, the boxes in the back worked and everything.
See, and that's before we had all the Vertigo stuff was on the floor. And like you said, I came in one day and I was like, so you guys have anything else in the back? And y'all did. And I think I got a full run because I was kind of ahead of the curve. And I think it was because of Batman that I was like, hey, so what's this story? I read the first trade like Rob. And I was like, okay, I got to get all this. And that was the first thing where I was like, I'm going to get every issue.
And did you guys ever run into, because I was definitely like this, it was a different time where everything wasn't in trade the way it is now when I started reading consistently in the early aughts when you guys were still in middle school. You know, you couldn't get everything in trade, but even if it was something like Kingdom Come, I would be like, I have to get all the issues. I mean, there's no question I can't get a paperback of that. And there certainly weren't oversized hardcovers available at that point. I paid stupid amounts of money for certain books that I couldn't find because I refused to buy a paperback. Like, I would pay the same amount for one issue of a series that I could have gotten an entire paperback for. Did you guys ever fall into anything like that in trying to say, I am going to get an entire series in issues. I have to own it all.
I mean, there's only two series where I've felt like gung-ho about that. Like, even Sweet Tooth, as much as I loved it, and I think that series means a lot to me because that's, like, that series is why I think I read comics now, because I, like, got into it when it was, like, still a young series, and then, like, I didn't even have a subscription box. I would just come in every couple weeks thinking maybe there's a new Sweet Tooth. And, like, that's why I started coming into the shop on a regular basis. But even that, I didn't really care. Like, I've got, like, the first two trades and then the rest of issues. And I don't necessarily care to complete one or the other. But for whatever reason, the only two series where I've ever felt like I had to complete them were BPRD and Alan Moore's Supreme. Like,
that's
yeah.
I didn't even know about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm only missing two issues, and like, and I can't find them. Like, I've even for BPRD, I used to tour with my band a whole lot, and that was like the thing is if we would get to a city early, I would want to go. I would just Google comic book shop, and I had a list in my phone of every BPRD issue I didn't have, which was kind of hard to do because it was all miniseries, and sometimes I would be like, "Oh, I don't even know what that miniseries is." It took me like 2 or 3 years to finally get them all, and I mean, now I finally have them, and I'm caught up, which that was like a whole nother thing because I was missing some early stuff.
Did you start reading them before you had them all? I can't remember because you're still reading some of them now, right?
Yeah, well, no, I'm caught up now, but it's like very recently that I've caught up. I read like the Russia miniseries. I read like the first issue of that, and it dawned on me. I was like, there is stuff that I don't know about this. And it was like number 80 something in a series. It's like what it said on the inside cover. So I was like, well, that's it. I got to get them all.
That's also got to be so much harder about BPRD, like you just said, because up until I think it was number 100 almost 2 years ago now, it was just a bunch of miniseries that don't say like, this is the next one to come. Like without the trades, you wouldn't know what order to read them or looking at the dates, except on the inside cover where it would say what you were missing. So did you always know what you were missing on that series like that?
There's some interesting trivia. There was actually a numbering like malfunction when that was coming out too. So there was like some built in confusion in that because at some point even Dark Horse got it wrong. And then like, there's actually like a Scott Alley like editor's note in the back of one saying like, oh, we realized what the problem was, we fixed it now. But like really early on, I just went to like Dark Horse's website and they had all like, just luckily they had it all listed in order. And so then I just like typed it into my phone, and so I just had like a running list of like Return of the Master 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and if I would find number 2 and 4, then I would just delete that. And then so it was never really that hard to like, once I found that list. But there were definitely some, even with having that, there were some like single issues thrown in there that I didn't know about until I just happened to like see it sitting there. And I was like, oh man, I had no idea that existed. And I'm glad I'm doing it now too, because I feel like BPRD is getting even more confusing because it's like they're trying to make it easier, but now there's some miniseries that don't count in like the actual numbering. Well,
because you have your BPRD, then BPRD Hell on Earth, and then, you know, 1944, 45, and on.
Plus like 46, 47, 48. Yeah. And now Vampire's like the next installment of that.
And they don't package the BPRD trades necessarily in the order they come out. They do it with one shots, and maybe they'll do a collection of one shots, and then a story arc, and it just...
It's only a matter of time until we get Hellboy 500 at this point, where they just decide to count every Witchfinder, Baltimore, Hellboy, BPRD, what am I forgetting? Abe Sapien. They'll just count everything and have Hellboy 500.
But I actually have, like, I guess it wasn't just BPRD, it was everything Hellboy. So, like, Lobster Johnson, Abe Sapien, Witchfinder, Baltimore, BPRD.
Now Sledgehammer.
Yeah, I have every single issue of every single thing other than Hellboy. And like, again, like, it's kind of silly, I guess, that I would care so much to get all like the side, like the spinoffs, but Hellboy just seems too daunting to try to seek out issues like that.
I feel like it would be easier than you think it is. You might even be in the same room as everything you could ever want right now.
That's true.
But there was an issue... Abe Sapien, Drums of the Damned, I think it was called. It was a one-shot, and it was like the first non-Hellboy BPRD anything that they had done. And I felt like I had only heard about it, and it took, like, I would search for it and ask about it at every shop I went to for years. And then finally I, like, looked in one of my BPRD trades, and I was like, oh, I already read that. Like, it didn't even dawn on me like that.
Yeah, it was so fun to like go to shops all over the country. And little plug for Acme. That's when I realized how good Acme was, because I've probably been to like more than my fair share of comic shops across the entire country. And I could not believe how like just poorly put together some of them were. So that was when I like really started to appreciate what you guys have going on here. It is just like how much other shops don't really seem to care as much. But yeah, it was so exciting to like to find an issue of BPRD or Abe or like whatever that I didn't have. So that when I actually like completed the series, it was almost like it bummed me out. Like I was like, oh, well, now what do I do? I guess
like
I read them
now. Like I'm trying to think. I definitely read all of Peter David's Supergirl, which I bought, I think, at Baltimore last year
when
we were there. And I just finished it a couple months ago. I'm like, now what's next? What's next? What am I going to hunt for every issue of around Heroes, I was like, it's going
to
be Savage Dragon. I'm
going to
get every Savage Dragon. And I picked up like the first 10 issues of Savage Dragon at Heroes. And I was like, this sucks. So I'm still looking for that thing.
I mean, that's like, I don't even know why I started trying to get every issue of Supreme or Alan Moore's Supreme, because I've only read the first one. but I really series. Liked it. And the funny thing is, this might be like, you know, not okay to say, but I don't even really like Alan Moore that much. I don't know. I felt like I had to have every single issue, and there's two issues that I can't find. I've even looked online. I've like resorted to that, and I can't find them.
It's just so funny that it's Supreme, because it's not like that's Alan Moore's like known work or anything, or that Supreme's like the best superhero.
But I feel like that's not that uncommon. Like Adam definitely does that. Where Adam, who used to be a co-host on the show too, like I think Thunderbolts, he did that, where he collected every single Thunderbolts before he read any of them. And he was like, volume 2 of Catwoman, I'm going to collect all of them before he read any of them. And there you're not talking about like 20-something issues like Alan Moore Supreme, but you're talking about like 80 to 150 issues in some cases.
That's insane. See, that's nuts. See, I don't think I ever got bit by the bug that hard. Like, I definitely did it with American Vampire, and I did it with Sweet Tooth. Other than that, I don't think there's any that I've got really gone back like years back and tried to like okay, I have to fill in all of these gaps.
I think there were definitely things though before the Image resurgence of the last 2 years, which I usually credit for starting with Fatale, and it's a good thing to bring that up again for people that don't remember me saying this over and over, where Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips had been doing Criminal for 4 or 5 years at Icon for Marvel. They had done Incognito in the midst of it, and those always sold between like 20 and 30 copies, regardless of if it was a new jumping on point or whatever. It was all the same. Relaunching Criminal never brought new people to the book. So when Fatale came out, we were like, okay, I guess we need like 35, 40 copies. You know, there's no reason anyone else is going to show up for the new Ed Brubaker, Sean Phillips book. And those were gone like within 5 minutes. And that was partially because of people like you guys who had never been in. I think that was the first January or February that you guys would have been coming in regular. So you would have started coming in September for the new 52. And then that's when I remember you guys really transitioning over and getting into Image Comics stuff. And even before that, I think you were on Severed around that September, October. You were picking up the Strange Talent of Luther Strode books that I wasn't paying any attention to, because at that point I had given up on Image Comics and I wasn't connecting these names and I wasn't giving anything a shot. But you guys early on in your comic reading career, or at least coming in regularly to Acme, were the ones that made us start paying attention, to the point where I remember being like, all right, well, you know, I don't know what this is, but it's a number one from Image Comics, so, you know, Riley and Rob and Matt and Lee will all buy it regardless of what it is. So we need to order twice as many as we would have ordinarily, even though we didn't understand it and we weren't ready for that.
Well, I feel like it's funny because, like, just walking in, it was so... I guess that was, like, I didn't know it as, like, the beginning of, like, the new face of Image or whatever, but I would just see number one and... It wasn't a superhero thing, and so I was like, "Oh yeah, that's it. That's like my favorite thing right there. That's what I need." And like I still have like a handful of Image books that didn't even make it very far, but I feel like we're in like those first couple new Image number ones where I just felt like this is for me. It's like exactly what I need. It like looks cool. It's like visually appealing, and it's number one. It's the beginning, and so whether I like realized it or not, it's like just being able to be like on the ground floor or something, I was like, I have to at least try.
I mean, yeah, I think it was the same thing with, like, you know, New 52 came out, first issue, I'm going to get all of them. So then I kind of started doing that with Image, where, I mean, even now, people say they want all these Image first. No, you don't. You do not want every single first issue the Image puts out. You hear about all the good ones. You don't hear about all the bad ones. And back then, I was definitely picking up some of the bad ones, too. But I also got some of the good stuff, like Fatal, Luther Strode, and some of the other big ones that were coming out then.
I remember you guys would also drive me crazy, because if we didn't have something immediately, like, we would get a direct ship order in, which basically means, like, you're sending an order to the warehouse and you're like, I can't wait until my next shipment, I need it right now, and they, like, send it out overnight or 2-day delivery to you. And so, like, Rob and Riley would ask for something on Wednesday, we would have it on Friday, and, like, I would call them or they would stop in and I'd be like, all right, it's here, you asked for it, here it is. And then Riley would be like, oh, my mom was in Wilmington to visit my sister and she already bought it for me.
Yeah, I think that's about when you decided you hated me.
But it was just, you know, looking back, it was just such a crazy sense of enthusiasm that you guys had about whatever it was. And that is still carrying on today, whether people realize it or not, because you guys started the line on Wednesday mornings before we opened. Like, that was
the Breakfast Club, I think, is what Breakfast you guys refer to us as.
Because you guys would come get your comics and then go to Smith Street Diner and eat breakfast and talk about what you bought and stuff. And you started the line that carries on today that is really unlike anything else in the country.
Yeah, see, I didn't, and we never thought that
was weird.
Yeah, like, that was just like, you know, we got to go get our comics. Like, that was like, it was Wednesday, that's what we had to do. Yeah,
I mean, before that, and I probably didn't talk about this much. A lot of the reason that I started doing the things I do on Wednesday, like looking at the invoice and creating the lists and stuff like that, is because before you guys started showing up at 10 a.m., even when we started getting books a day early on Tuesdays and having the wall ready to go, we would just be standing around like for 2.5-3 hours. And so until lunchtime, no one would come in. Even though the books were ready to go, people didn't learn to come in that early until you guys started doing it.
Yeah, I think, like, well, I think it was like a combination of a couple things, like just the fact of being like, oh, well, I'll go at some point this week, like Thursday or Friday or whatever, and then going and, like, you know, not having put something on my list and then finding out about it on Wednesday night on some website and then going in on Thursday and it's not there. And I'm like, man, I could have had that. And then, like, but I've always lived downtown, and around that time I worked at the Rush, like way up on Battleground, and I would always get done with my morning clients around 9:30. So it just made sense that I was like, oh, well, I'll just go sit at Acme until they open. And then, like, I don't know, I guess, like, everybody's, like, all of our, like, it was 3 or 4 of us, and, like, all of our work schedules just kind of worked to where, like, it made sense for us to go to the comic shop at 9:30. And so we were all just like, yeah, let's just meet up and we'll hang out. And if it was raining, we would just hang out in our cars.
But yeah, that definitely came like a ritual for a weekly ritual, was just coming on Wednesday mornings. And I think it was, you know, everything Rob said. And for me, I don't know, Rob never got bit by this bug, but I was
the,
like,
variant
I have
bug?
To
I
get,
know you're going
to
say variants.
I have to get variants. And so that was a big thing for me. It was just like, I know there's only like one, maybe two of some of these things. And so I have to get in there and get these, because I didn't even realize that you could, you know, ask for some of those things to be held. And
dude, I can never stop thinking about your Incredible Hulk $50, your $50 Hulk sketch variant that I remember the day you bought it and you were showing it off to me. And I was like, man, that was stupid.
Was like, that like the Jason Aaron and Ron Garney Hulk?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it was like the black and white Silvestri variant, which was stupid.
Well, see, I remember the day you bought it, and I was just saying, like, not to say that it's stupid, like, if you love Hulk or you love whatever artist is doing, whatever, but I just remember thinking, like, you don't have any investment in anything to do with this book. You just saw a $50 price tag and thought, I have to have this.
Yeah.
And I remember you didn't even try to defend it. You were just like, yeah, I just wanted it.
And that really was it. I don't know what I was thinking, but I just wanted it. It was rare. I needed to have it. And as to where, you know, if you like Spider-Man, a lot of people like have to get all the Spider-Man variants. There was no method to my madness. It was just, I just had to have it.
Dude, I got these Pokemon cards at home. You might want to take a look at. They're pretty rare. You might be able to take some off my hands.
Yeah, we'll have to look at
competitively priced.
Well, I think from that point in those stories is where you guys kind of start to divulge, because most of the time when I saw you, it would either be together or it would just be Riley being super annoying. Like I'm sure I've told it on here, but if I haven't, there was some Tuesday where we had closed up, and at that point we didn't even start pulling subscriptions until after we had closed. So when we closed at like 6 or 7 o'clock, we had another like 2-3 hours of work to set up at that point for the new releases the next day. And it's like, all right, we got to get started. And like Riley would come up to the door after we closed and like bang on the door and like being making subscription changes like through the cracked open door. And I was just like, what is wrong with this guy? He's going to be here before anyone else tomorrow anyway. What does this matter?
I mean, I remember you, I would like go to y'all, yours and Matt's house, and you guys would have like your subscriptions printed out, and you'd be like having like a meeting at the kitchen
table. Yeah,
Riley
would want like a new printout of his list like every week, but there wouldn't even be that much to adjust or anything, but just like it would get so obsessive about it. But I feel like from that point, and I don't even remember what it was, Riley started helping out, like organizing books and stuff like that.
Yeah, I remember, and it was when you were away in San Diego and we decided to paint the store, and that's when I really started helping out. I was like, all right, well, I'll help paint. And it was shortly, I guess it was like a year after that, that I was helping out and still working at Emma Keys, and then went to Baltimore with you guys that following year and then started working.
Man, I remember that time really well too, because we always kind of looked at you guys like celebrities. We were like, man, what's Steven and Jerome up to? No, we always thought you guys were just like so cool. Like, we like didn't know how, like, I don't know. It was weird. It was like you just see, like, we had gotten into this new hobby and we were like, you know, drowning in it. And but we saw these two like cool collect dudes who like knew everything that we wished we knew. And so we like looked up to you guys a lot. And I remember when Riley, the first time he came on the podcast, he like texted me or called me or like did both within like 5 minutes, like 10 times. Like, man, they asked me to be on the podcast. I don't know what I'm going to do, man. Like, what if I got, what if it's cause I just read all the Avengers stuff, but like, I don't know what I'm going to say. And like, it was so funny. It was like,
it was, there was it, definitely,
and sounds, I remember him going to Baltimore
right,
too.
That was when, like, since you mentioned, you know, getting into Fear Itself, that you were reading like the whole Bendis run, like disassembled, to getting caught up just in time for Fear Itself.
And y'all brought in me and Clark Sellers to talk about AVX, because he was a diehard DC fan and I was a new Marvel fan, and y'all just wanted to get our opinions on it. But yeah, I just remember I was so nervous. I had no idea what I was going to say. Like, I'd hardly even hung out with you guys at that point. I was like, man, like, they know everything. I don't know anything. What am I gonna say?
And I remember driving to work listening to the podcast being like, man, I hope Riley didn't blow it for us.
But do you guys see that in yourselves at the gym now,
like
when,
how so?
When someone new comes in, so like at that point you guys were listening to the podcast, Adam had been on almost since the beginning, like it was me and Jerome and Adam and Frank at that point. When Adam just started coming to the gym last month and he sees you guys lifting 140 kilos or something like that and just being,
I wish,
well, 120 well, yeah, clean and jerk, or 170 squat or whatever, when he sees that and it's like, man, these guys lift everything. Like,
well, it's funny,
can
because
you see that in yourself in the path that life has taken you.
I mean, I guess so. Yeah. Like, I guess anytime that you become like a recognized expert, air quotes, in your field or whatever, and like somebody gets introduced to it and they get excited about it, I guess I can understand that. I've never really thought about it like that before now, but I can see how it's like, it's the exact same thing. It is funny though, because when Adam started coming to the gym and I would ask him a question and he would respond and be like, I know that voice. Like,
I don't really see it that much. I mean, obviously, you're the owner of the gym. Like, you know much more than I do about it, so you would see it more so than I.
Well, I think that it's few and far between when people get like that. Because, like, you know, I know that, like, there have definitely been, since, like, we've come into the shop, there have definitely been a fair share of people that get just as deep into it as us. But, like, I'm sure there's people, too, that don't. You know, and it's the same as like, that with the gym. It's, like, it's not everyone who comes in that's, like, obsessed with it, but then there are some people who like just want to text me about it all the time and like ask this or that question. So it's just a matter of, I guess, like what you get into.
I bring that up because I feel the same way. Like you were saying, like, I can't ask him about this. Like, how can I ask about this lift without proving that I really don't know anything that I'm talking about? Like, those feelings are very similar in going to the gym as well.
Yeah. And it's funny too, because if like knowing that, I'm like, well, just ask me, you know, like, I'm like, to me, that doesn't think like, oh yeah, like, you know, I do this all day long, every single day. So, you know, if you're not doing it all day long, every single day, of course you'd have some questions. Like that's not weird or not okay.
But I guess the difference is like, you just bought some terrible comic that you didn't want to ask my opinion about, and
right.
I retch my back and I'm laid up for a week and a half.
Oh, right, yeah. That's true.
But it is interesting, and, you know, obviously Riley has his foot in both worlds even more so than I do and stuff, but it's just interesting to see, you know, you were already working at the Rush, but I feel like you guys had that same enthusiasm and that it did just divulge. Not that you don't still read comics and aren't still ahead of the curve like you're talking about. I feel like you might even be more so ahead of the curve, like Deep Gravity from Dark Horse. You were like, can you add Deep Gravity to my list? And I'm like, I don't even know what that is. But, you know, you have your finger on the pulse enough that you know about these things before even I do in some cases. So you're still, you know, into comics too. But
yeah, I'm pretty good at comics.
It's just it's just an interesting, like, divergence where I feel like it's not like a, I don't know what the analogy is. I was going to say like Schrodinger's cat or something. Like, you and Riley were both like faceless, and like one of you could have, you guys could be in completely opposite roles right now. It's kind of how I always thought about it, too.
Yeah, where I've always kind of thought about it like Seven's this cat as well. I don't actually know what that is.
The thing where there's like a cat in the box and the cat could be alive or dead until you open the box.
And you see it twice, you're in the Matrix. Okay, yeah.
I don't know. That's...
We explain it to me one more time.
Now, I know you made a special trip. Every day is Wednesday for you at the gym. You have a full day of classes, except when you're paying Riley to take over them. You made a special trip to the store yesterday to pick up comics so that we have some here at the table that we can all discuss, and I didn't want you to have all that go to waste. So let's talk about some comics at the table, beginning with The Fade Out, number one by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips from Image Comics. This is the first one of the groundbreaking, and this is where I feel like I don't know if people really care about the creator-owned title, because Jermaine always says creator-owned isn't for the reader. Readers don't care about creator-owned. They care about good stories, no matter where they come from. And in the case of The Fade Out, I think people would care even less that there's this groundbreaking 5-year deal starting with this issue for Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, where they can put out anything from Image Comics. But be that as it may, that's what we have starting this week.
Well, and I think this is the first one, like you said, I guess Fatale, you weren't sure how to order on. Fatale worked out. So we ordered heavy on this one. And if I'm not mistaken, now we're already sold out and we ordered.
Correct. We ordered more than double what we did on Fatale number one. Wow. And even that wasn't enough. So, you know, I was of the opinion, I think it has been less than 4 weeks since Fatale ended with issue 24. And I was like, man, people didn't even have to wait. Like, there was no more build up to this new number one. than there was from anything else, at least between Criminal and Fatale starting. It's like, oh, they're changing companies and stuff. Like, this is in, I guess part of it is I feel like, you know, Fatale had the white trade dress on it. There was always the white border on the covers. The title was always like negative space on top of the image, which is the exact same thing you have with Fade Out. And the number one on this issue isn't even like super prominent, like New Jumping On Point, Invincible 111, or Walking Dead 100, or New Direction for Walking Dead was. So I'm surprised so many new people came to it, even now.
Yeah, to me it's, you know, I read Criminal first and I absolutely loved it. And I read Fatale, and I think like having read Criminal all at once, like I absolutely loved it. I got like the deluxe hardcover or whatever, the first one. And if I didn't read it in one sitting, I read it in two sittings. And Fatale almost kind of lost me for a little while, because I felt like it just wasn't enough at one point. Like, I think that like Sean Phillips and Ed Brubaker, they do what they do incredibly well, but I feel like it's hard to do not reading it in chunks. So like even with Fatale, it would get to the point that I would let a couple issues build up, and then if I would read them in like, you know, a run, I would be like, oh yeah, I love this. But like reading one at a time, I would be like, nah, you know, take it or leave it. And so I was like, I thought about that going into this, and so I was kind of like guarded, like I'm probably not gonna think it's that great. But when I was reading it today, I was like, oh yeah, like turning each page, like I just like missed that, like their style I think is just so good. You know, I feel like the whole like pulp kind of feel has almost become like cliche, but I think they just do it so well that it's like nothing about it seems cliche.
I think since you mentioned Fatale, the scope was really hard to get your head around, how long
yeah
the main character had been suffering, how many lives she had destroyed. And sometimes it was just like, man, this is brutal. Like, I can't read it the same way. And it wasn't grounded in reality. Obviously, Incognito wasn't, since that was superheroes, but Criminal was so grounded in reality. Jermaine would always say, nothing happens in Criminal that couldn't happen to you on a really bad day. Like, yeah, you go left when you should have gone right, and like get into a fender bender with somebody that's a monster, and like, you're into a criminal story, which was really a big part of that. And I think they're getting back to that with the Fade Out.
Yeah, that'll probably honestly make it a lot more enjoyable to read on a monthly basis.
And I was kind of with Rob's thinking in that I did get lost in Fatale for a while, got to the point to where I let a few build up. And then after reading it in chunks, I feel like it was easier to digest than just doing it month by month. Kind of like you said, it just wasn't grounded in reality. So you had all this occult stuff to think about. There was a couple storylines going on at different points in her life, so it's just really hard to do month to month. But with this being, you know, just Hollywood noir, nothing crazy about it, it was just really easy to take in. And just, I don't feel like I'm drowning in it. With like, I feel like I'll be able to do this month to month and not have to worry about like, okay, so what happened with this guy? Who was this again?
Also, I think I love the stuff that they do in the backs, which I didn't even look at like this, because I bought the like the big magazine like issue, but I'm assuming they do like the same thing, yeah, in the back of each one. I think it's so awesome because it makes it like worth buying. Oh yeah, I mean there's even more in like the magazine format one, because it had the like a lot more of the process stuff.
Layout.
But like the process stuff, I don't know. Maybe it's just because it's so common. Like I'll always just kind of glance over it. But I love like the essays and like little side things that they put in the back of their books. And it was the same thing that I feel like Matt Kent's whole thing with Mind Management is like, you got to make an issue worth buying if you want someone to buy it, like as opposed to the trade. And I know that's kind of like backward reasoning, because if enough people don't buy the issue, it's not going to last. But sometimes I have a really hard time telling myself, like, yeah, I've got to buy these issues, as opposed to just being like, oh, or I could just wait for this cool-looking book to sit on my bookshelf where it's going to be more attractive, like, in my house. But I don't know. I guess because, like, I've always been a fan of, like, you know, pulpy kind of old things, the essays and stories and stuff that they do in the back are always so interesting to me. It's like I enjoy reading that stuff just as much as the comic.
I'm almost surprised they haven't done like a companion hardcover for all their stuff. And I would be surprised if they wouldn't at some point, like, just do a hardcover of all the essays that ran in the back of Criminal, or a hardcover of all the essays that ran in the back of Fatale. And I know, like you're saying, they do that to entice people into reading it monthly, but it just seems like it's a waste to just let that go out into the ether where people are never going to think about it.
Yeah.
But it is a, you know, as the reason he does it, just a good incentive to support it monthly. Just like I said, Fatale, I wasn't necessarily reading it monthly, but that didn't stop me from getting every issue every month because I did want that extra material. And it's not like it's just something that they, you know, phoned in. It's quality essays that they put in the back. It's good stuff.
The other crazy part, and I feel like they put all of the Criminal essay images. Like, in Criminal, there would almost be, like, a title page for each essay that Sean Phillips would do. And this was, like, a cover-quality image. And I think they had all of those in the hardcover. You know, Sean Phillips is putting in the work of doing a whole second cover into what he does. And it's pretty amazing. And I think that they're onto something good. And I think that they have a good head of steam going. And if they can pick up a couple people here and there every time they do a new number one... And it almost seems like a Hickman style to have the same look on the book as they did on Fatale. So yeah. People can feel like they have a new jumping on point, but there's also a good sense of continuity for people that read 24 issues of Fatale to just be like, oh, this is what I replace this with. Like, I don't have to look for anything else. This is it.
Yeah, I mean, it almost feels like an anthology series kind of thing, where it's like, it's so similar, but it's different enough. You know, I think it's very easy. Like, if you like one thing that they did, you'll probably like all of it.
And that's why I made the display that I did, which got a lot more traction online than I expected it to when I posted the picture on Tuesday night. When you see how much material they have done together, and that's... You would probably get, like, Bendis and Mike Oeming, but there's probably no creative team other than them that would rival the amount of work that they've put out. Like, Mark Miller probably has as many things, but it's by a dozen different artists. But when two people find each other and from one genre to the next can just connect and can put something together so strong is incredibly rare.
Yeah, and, like, I feel like I've read everything except for the one that was, like, whatever, like, the very first thing they did.
Scene of the Crime.
Yeah, yeah. I have not read that, but I feel like even, like, the stuff that I've read by them, that's, like, some of it I like more than others, but I don't think any of it's bad.
Was Scene of the Crime Phillips or Lark? I think that was Lark.
I think Phillips had something to do with it. He might have done the covers or something.
Okay.
Even though Michael Lark did the interiors. But, yeah, they're an unbelievable combination, and I look forward to everything that the Fade Out has. And I mean, you could go ahead and say, like, subscribe me to everything for the next 5 years with the deal that they have with Image.
Well, and too, I think Image is hooking them up with this one because they said, you know, they're getting the same colors that they had for Fatale, and this is the first one that they've had an editor on. So I think that they're really getting, like, the full package with this one, that Image really believes in them now.
Well, yeah, editor and, like, a research team.
Yeah, yeah.
Or research consultant or whatever.
Well, next up, we have the return of Dark Horse Presents, which is in a different format than it was before. I think it was 80 pages and $7.99, and now it's down to 56 pages for $4.99 with the relaunch. Did you guys get pulled into it? Obviously, there were some BPRD stories. There were some Hellboy stories that you probably picked up in the previous run, but it's a lot to fill 80 pages of story on a monthly basis like they did with the last run.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I bought a few issues of Dark Horse Presents, but like you said, it was solely based on if there was a story that I wanted to read. I don't know if I ever read the full 80 pages. It was just a lot to take in. So if there was, you know, a Mike Mignola story I couldn't get anywhere else or something like that, I would go ahead and pick it up. But it's hard to convince yourself to spend $7.99 on a 5-page story.
Well, especially when I feel like they have a track record of, like, if it's good, it gets collected.
Yeah, and that goes for, like, Gamma, and I feel like there was something Deep Sea or something like that.
Deep Space something.
I don't remember.
There was one that was, like, Station to Station.
Yeah, yeah.
I think.
that were all originally serialized in Dark Horse Presents, and they ended up pulling out and releasing as a one-shot issue. Yeah, the Creep Zero. The Creep,
yeah. There's I feel like, and there's more than that. There's something I just can't think of that I ended up actually really, really liking that I didn't know what it was at the time, but then somebody was like, oh, it's from Dark Horse Presents. Like, it's just, this is all the collected Dark Horse Presents stuff. And then I think I quickly got the mindset of like, well, I could buy like two, maybe even three other books when like I, you know, that way I try a couple different things versus like, I don't know if I'm going to like everything in here. And if I was going to like it, it's probably going to get collected later anyway. So I always had a hard time like just spending the money on it. Mm-hmm. But so I think that like the price point and like smaller size is definitely like going to work in their favor.
And it's interesting that this is, I guess, the fourth instance of Dark Horse Presents where the original series ran 100 and something issues, maybe 120, 140 issues. And that would have like multi-part Hellboy stories like The Wolves of St. August. I think Pancakes, which is one of my favorite Hellboy stories, was in like a Dark Horse Presents annual. I think the first appearance of Buffy in comics was in Dark Horse Presents. So there's a lot of history for the series, and probably their most ill-fated release was the MySpace Dark Horse Presents, where they did it digital first for free on MySpace, and then they only released it in print in trades.
Yeah, I remember seeing those trades and not knowing what it was, but like just the fact that it said MySpace Dark Horse Presents, I was like, I'm not looking at that.
Yeah, same here.
But in the new package, they're leading with Big Guy and Rusty, the boy robot, which was a Fox Kids cartoon in the 90s, probably when you guys were 2 or 3 years old.
Yeah,
it was created by Frank Miller and Jeff Darrow. There's an oversized paperback of the original stories that they did. And this is just a quick one-off story that's only written and illustrated by Jeff Darrow. Frank Miller wasn't really involved. And then the big thing for me was that this was the return of Kabuki, which is David Mack's opus. I think I read somewhere that it's 20 or 25 years old now, that it's been running that long, but there hasn't been a new Kabuki story in 6 or 7 years. So it's interesting that it's back. It's at a different publisher. He was previously at Image and then Icon, and it might have even started at Caliber Comics, but not new reader friendly at all. Even as somebody that's read it all, I couldn't remember what was going on.
Well, I think you said earlier in this week that for David Mack, it's probably more so about the art than it is anything else.
I'll be interested to see what they throw in here. I feel like there should be more lead-ins to series that have a lot of hype, like The Massive started in Dark Horse Presents. I think Mind Management had a story in Dark Horse Presents before it was anywhere else, and I would like to see more of that, more lead-in, like you said, with The Creep, too. And also selling out at the distributor before it hit the shelves this week was Little Nemo, Return to Slumberland, number one by Eric Schanauer and Gabriel Rodriguez from IDW. I feel like the heat around our store, where we obviously loved Lock and Key more than Words, is this is the first interiors from Gabe Rodriguez since he finished up Lock and Key last fall. And this is also written by Eric Schanauer, who is the Eisner Award-winning writer of The Wizard of Oz from Marvel Comics. So it's a great pairing. It goes back to a comic strip predating The Golden Age by Winsor McCay, which I'm trying to remember the stories that I've heard here. There are older customers that we appreciate and the wealth of knowledge that they can impart upon us, but I'm pretty sure one of them said that one of the newspaper publishers at the time wanted the Sunday broadsheet editions of Little Nemo to be in color so much that he was printing the paper at a loss, like just so people could see Little Nemo in color. And that's how important it was to him. That's how intricate and engaging Winsor McCay's style was. And that's how much it meant to the world to be able to see that. And so, like, when you get into seeing the funnies in color and stuff on Sundays, that's where that kind of thing gets its start, back in the 19-teens and 20s.
I when I was a kid, we would always, like, on Friday nights, go to movies on Stratford Road, because I was, like, in Winston-Salem, because I was, like, on the way home, and my older sister could pick out a movie, and I could pick out a movie, and it was, like, I alternated every single week between Little Nemo, Adventures in Slumberland, and Rockadoodle. I don't know why my parents didn't just buy those movies. Like, we probably could have saved a lot of money, but... Like, when I was a kid, I loved the movie, and I didn't even know that it was, like, a thing. Honestly, not even until, like, a year ago did I know that it was anything other than this movie that, oh, yeah, I loved it when I was a kid. Until, well, it honestly might have been when, like, the artist edition came out, and I saw it. I was like, oh, wow, like, this is a thing? And I tried to rewatch the movie not that long ago. Like, I bought it at Ed McKay's, and it didn't really hold up. Like, I just remember... I remember there were, like, parts that were so scary to me when I was a kid, and then, like, but overall it was just so good. And it was almost like I tried watching it twice, and it was, like, hard to finish both times. So I was kind of nervous about reading the book, because I was like, you know, I loved this when I was a kid. I don't really love it anymore, but it's one of, like, the few things that when I looked at the artist edition and when I, like, look at some of the old strip stuff that's included in the back... Like, a lot of times I see old stuff, and the fact that I'm not personally an artist and I don't really have, like, an artist mindset, I see old groundbreaking art and I'm like, yeah, it's cool. Like, it doesn't really mean anything to me. But when I see this stuff, I'm like, oh, wow, like, that actually is really crazy. Like, that's better than stuff that I've seen that I know that's, like, 50 years more recent. But I honestly couldn't believe how much I enjoyed the book. Like, it was surprising to me how much I liked it.
And... I guess also not being super familiar with the source material, and I would always get Little Nemo, Adventures in Slumberland, and the Pagemaster confused myself. I don't think I ever saw either of them, and if I did, it wasn't all the way through.
I wasn't allowed to see the Pagemaster. I loved it. Sorcery.
But the setup for this is that the princess from the original Little Nemo run is now looking for a new playmate in Slumberland, and they've chosen this kid who's... I guess his name is Jimmy, but his middle name is Nemo. And so when she heard that, she was like, that's the kid. I want that kid. I want Nemo back. And this kid is just like, I have no idea what you're talking about, as all of these dream creatures come to the real world to try and talk him into following them to Slumberland.
See, I have no history at all with Little Nemo. So I never saw the movie. You know, I knew it was just from working here. It's a Platinum Age, I guess, comic. And so I was just excited to see pretty much what Gabriel Rodriguez could do, because I loved Lock and Key so much. But
it looks like he's trying to, like, live up to how awesome the original art was, because, like, looking at some of the pages that he did, I can't imagine how long that must have taken him. Like, they're so intricate.
But you can see a common thread even between Lock and Key, where... You know, obviously this is all ages appropriate, and Lock and Key never, ever, ever was for any issue. But when you get into the draftsmanship that he would put into Lock and Key, like designing Key House, and then when you see the establishing shot of Slumberland near the end of the issue, and then you see the pencils that he did for it in the bonus material, you can see, like, he's still using the same muscles that he was, yeah, and that really interested him on Lock and Key, even though he is doing this whole different world.
Yeah. When I was looking at that, I kept, like, flip after I finished it. I kept, like, looking back at that page, and I'm kind of excited to see how much, like, he sticks to that, because I know in Lock and Key, you know, it was consistent. Like, you know, you could build a world map, you know, based on that stuff. So it's going to be cool to see.
Yeah. There was that, I think Joe Hill said it at that panel we were at Baltimore, where Joe Hill would have his script and Gabe Rodriguez would write him back and be like, that can't happen. And he's like, well, why not? And he was like, because the bathroom's on the third floor and this is all happening on the second floor, so they can't run across the hall into the bathroom.
Man, that's so awesome.
Yeah, so because of all that and the big spread they show of Slumberland, I am excited to see how he handles all the architecture going on. So it just looks like it'll be a lot of fun. And it looks like he's definitely channeling his, what the hell is his name? Windsor McKay. Like, a lot. just the way that he's drawing the beds and just him going into Slumberland, it looks exactly the way that Winsor McKay drew it.
Well, yeah, I think the other thing from the sample panels and anything that I've seen, the layouts where a lot of it is really horizontal and kind of two-dimensional until they do get into Slumberland, seems like it's reaching back to those early design influences as well. Yeah. I'm almost disappointed that they didn't do it in an oversized format, like they've done the Colossal Lock and Key and the really big Joe Hill book that had Kodiak in it, and maybe Guide to Known Keys in that oversized format. And I'm almost disappointed they didn't just put it out like that so you could see it on that huge scale like the broadsheets were on the original comic strips.
Is it going to be every other month always? Do you know?
I don't know. I know it said the next issue is not until October.
Yeah, I mean, I could imagine like it's going to take him 2 months to do an issue, but whereas a lot of books that kind of turns me off, with this one, it kind of makes me excited because like I just, granted, like I said, you know, the only background I have is loving the movie, but thinking about some of the parts from the movie, watching him draw it is going to be awesome, and I almost feel like it's worth, like, the fact that it's going to be 2 months before I see it again kind of makes me excited because it's not some like crazy complex story where you have to like constantly remember all these names and faces. Like I think this book is going to be mostly really fun to look at.
And it's one of those things that if it is a timeless story, then you're not even going to remember that a year from now. No one that enjoys this, you know, if you were like, let's read it with my kids or something like that, you know, they're not going to know, like, oh, this took forever.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And the final big number one of the week was Multiversity from DC Comics. This is by Grant Morrison and Ivan Hayes. And first of all, let me get your opinion on this. I was talking to somebody about it last night, and I can't decide if Multiversity is like, let's give Grant Morrison a pocket of the DC universe that he can play in where he can't break any of the toys that we need for anything else. Or is this supposed to be the flagship book of DC Comics? Is everything supposed to be building towards this and a giant showdown with everything else? What is your feeling based solely on the marketing of this book?
It seems like this is going to be it. I mean, I feel like they're really pushing this. But then, I mean, if you look back, you know, the way Grant Morrison handled Action Comics, it's like editorial had no hand in it. Action Comics played out the way Grant Morrison wanted it to. So I'm just curious if Grant Morrison's going to play by the rules on this.
Well, I mean, and this is, I guess, maybe just from like not even being like ear to the street, but just like listening to a lot of the news and stuff of what's going on with DC, it almost feels like DC's like hurtling down a cliff and they're like, this is what we got to do. Like, all right, he wants to do this. Awesome. Let's put everything in.
Pull
this.
The e-brake.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so, I mean, I don't know. I guess, like, you know, I haven't seen as much as like the stuff about it as you guys, but to me, it seems like if they are throwing everything into this, it's because they feel like they have to.
But again, and I would have to go back and find the article, which I have for show notes when we've talked about it before. I feel like they announced this maybe New 52, or right when the New 52 started, and like Frank Quitely was supposed to be involved and stuff, and that was the early preview images that they showed years ago.
Well, apparently there is still going to be a Frank Quitely issue. Okay. Right? I mean, I think I'm pretty sure that's what I read, that it was saying, like, I don't think the artist is going to be consistent on this.
Well, yeah, they're doing different Earths or different stories. Yeah. Like, next month is Multiversity, like Secret Society of Superheroes or something like that. And the month after that is The Just. And that's the other thing where I don't understand the structure of it as somebody that's ordering it. And I feel like fans don't understand the structure of it because somebody was like, give me the Multiversity storyline, but none of the tie-in issues, because in theory they saw the books coming out in the next 2 months and they're like, I don't want those. Well, it's like, maybe that's all there is, because when Grant Morrison did Seven Soldiers of Victory, that would have been back in 2006, 2007 probably. there was Seven Soldiers of Victory 0 and Seven Soldiers of Victory 1, which were by J.H. Williams. And then there were, I want to say, 6 4-issue miniseries in between. So if you were like, only give me the Seven Soldiers of Victory, you know, main storyline, and then in theory you're only getting 0 and 1 and have no idea what's happened with anything else.
Well, the way, like, when I was reading about it, I'm almost, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like the way they were saying it's going to be is like, it might just be this issue and then like 6 issues that are kind of doing something different. And then like another issue at the end that kind of like pancakes it all, or sandwiches, I guess, with, we're talking 2 pieces of bread, like puts it all together.
That sounds more like the way Seven Soldiers did work. But again, I feel like that explanation hasn't really been put out there clearly to the public.
Well, and even so, if they did that, I feel like the way that that's formatted is so that, you know, it's designed so that he's assuming that the reader is going to be reading everything in between. You know, that second issue, the last issue of Multiversity, if you were to just pick that up after only reading the first one a year ago, it is going to do nothing for you.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing with Seven Soldiers is that, like, let's say you were a fan of Jack Kirby and the New Gods, and you're like, I'm going to read the Mr. Miracle story, but somebody else is a fan of Frankenstein or a fan of Dunk Monkey, and they're like, I'm only going to read that. Then they're not getting the whole story reading just those pieces, and they're not going to have everything they need looking forward. The other thing I wanted to ask about this book before we get into it.
Did we get it?
Have either of you read Final Crisis or Crisis on Infinite Earths?
Nope.
No, not at all. It's the whole, that whole thing has always just seemed really intimidating. And also, I just never, I guess, like, Marvel events always seemed a little more, like, enticing to me. So I just never even considered reading those DC ones.
Well, I'm not invested enough in, like, the, I guess, DC continuity. You know, like, I jumped on with New 52. That is all I'm concerned with. So when people are like, well, wait, what about, you know, this was pre-52. I don't know.
And that's where I feel like, you know, you're separating, I don't want to say the men from the boys.
All right. You said it.
But that's where I feel like people are really going to get lost, is that it's not in the Grant Morrison prose or anything, but like, it's like at the end of Forever Evil, which we can probably go ahead and spoil at this point, on the last page, you have the Anti-Monitor. And that's the big bad from Crisis on Infinite Earths and Infinite Crisis. And so the problem with that was, if you set up the New 52 to be like, this is all that ever mattered, then putting out something like the Anti-Monitor and having that be the, like, oh, snap moment of your storyline is going to mean nothing to your readers. And I feel like that's what happened in a lot of Multiversity, where once they get into the orrery of the, what are they even called? The monitors in here, which are like the watchers of the DC universe. And you have these establishing shots. They obviously harken back to what George Perez did in Crisis on Infinite Earths, where it's just a room full of characters and you can see who everybody is and you're excited about seeing them there. But if you haven't read Crisis on Infinite Earths, that doesn't mean anything to you. And when the Harbinger AI comes on and starts explaining things, that doesn't mean anything to you because you don't know that was a character created for Crisis on Infinite Earths, or that Nick Swaton is the monitor that you're following in here, and he was one of the main characters of Final Crisis. If you don't have that,
I didn't know any of this.
See, it's like the whole thing. Like, well, first, I feel like it took me almost like an hour to read it, you know. So I definitely got my $4.99's worth out of it. But it was, I feel like everything I've ever read with Grant Morrison, it feels like there's so much that's happening. It's like every other panel, it's this something crazy's happening, but it's almost like I don't have a scope for it. Like, there was so much going on that I didn't necessarily feel lost by the story, but I just felt like I'm missing something here.
But I remember going into Final Crisis like that, and then Final Crisis was super delayed because of J.G. Jones's work schedule on the art. And I read, like, all of Jack Kirby's New Gods between when, like, issue 2 and 3 came out.
And then having all of that knowledge, I went back and read 1 and 2 and I was like, this is amazing. Like, it all makes sense. But that's not fair and that's not fun for people that don't have all of that background. And I don't think you should necessarily be expected to, especially if this is the tentpole event. And then there's other things where I'm just like, what do they say? The spaceship is made out of frozen music or something like
something
that,
insane.
Where it's just that, like, that is not necessary. Yeah, like, that's adding nothing to the story. It's just making your head hurt.
There were definitely a couple word bubbles that when I would read them, I was like, Grant Morrison really thought that, like, he thought those words, and like, it was insane. Like, I feel like his head probably just has to hurt like all the time.
Well, that's like when you read Super Gods and you hear like how he feels the structure of reality to be, and then you read something like this, it's like, but he thinks this, like, this is how he sees reality, like vibrating on different frequencies and, like, you know, realities outside of realities and stuff. That's just, to him, this is like, man, the sky's blue. Like, that's what he is saying when he says some of the stuff about the structure of the universe that he puts out there and things like multiversity or the invisibles. Like, he's just like, I went outside and the grass is green. You know, and to him, it's like, this is the way it is.
Music notes. I mean, this again, this might be something that, like, just my lack of history with, like, DC. But I felt like the Hulk, Reed Richards, and Dr. Doom were all in this.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, definitely.
I mean, is that something that just as, like, I'm just ignorant to, like...
I mean, I think that's something that they're definitely playing with more... Because Marvel's doing the same thing in New Avengers, where they had a new Justice League analog. And that's what the Squadron Supreme was always supposed to be in Marvel, too. So it's like there's just another Earth happening here, just like in Marvel, where it's not that dissimilar from this other thing that it's going to be really familiar.
But that's not something that has already been like...
That's where my interest level is not... there to the point where I can be like, oh yeah, this person is from this Earth in this storyline, where even the map of the multiverse that we got from DC that Grant Morrison apparently came up with and is hanging up next door, you know, that holds no interest to me, or assigning a specific number to like New Frontier or Superman Red Sun or Gotham by Gaslight. I don't want that level of connectivity between everything. I just want a story to be a story.
Right. And I feel like I was surprised with myself that I enjoyed this more than I thought, because I haven't read a DC comic since like Death of the Family for Batman. Cause I just got kind of like tired of them. And so I was like, man, I'm going to get this, cause I know we're probably going to talk about it on here. But I liked it, even though I felt like I didn't get most of it. But I was just, I like the whole time I had to keep telling myself, like, all right, disconnect from the fact that you don't know who this is. Just like try to take it at face value. And I'm like, I've seen plenty of movies where the first 15 minutes, I'm like, I don't know what's going on. But then by the end, you're like, yeah, it was a good movie.
Yeah. And I'm kind of in the same boat as Rob here, that I don't have, you know, I don't know anything past, I don't have any knowledge pre New 52. So a lot of the stuff Steven was just explaining as I'm reading over it, I don't know what any of that means. The only thing I've read that, you know, I was like, I read The Authority, so I knew what the bleed was. And that was as far as my knowledge went. Like, I didn't know who any of these characters were. I couldn't place them on any of the universes.
I feel like the way that I used to think about DC was that, like, Marvel was way more... It was way easier to jump into something with Marvel, and DC was more of like a refined palate kind of taste. But I don't know that I think DC maybe, I mean, again, this is all just like what I thought, like looking at things on the shelf. I feel like DC maybe tried to get rid of that with the New 52, but now they're on this like middle ground kind of thing with this. I don't know if that's accurate at all, but that's just how it has always kind of seemed.
Well, and that's where just the whole DCU is unappealing to me, where people get these arguments like, oh, no, like, no, that's still continuity. No, it's not. No, that was pre-52. No, it's post. Like, no, this counts. No, that didn't happen. What? And it's just too much for me. So I'm just going to stay away from it. I'm going to read Batman, and that's it.
you know, they're not all on the same page, and it's everybody trying to retell the same stories again, which they always say, like, every time they relaunch Legion of Superheroes, they retell the Great Darkness saga within, like, the first 2 years. And that's kind of the pattern that DC is in, where, like, Death of the Family wasn't really about telling a novel story. It was just about seeing the Joker for the first time in the New 52. Like, they didn't do anything that had never been done before in there. It was just like, and here's how the Joker acts now, and here's how this person acts now. And at some point, like I always say about Superman, is you don't really know how Superman is in the New 52 because they're so worried about, like, still introducing new characters that they haven't thought about what the core of the characters is.
Well, also, that just made me think, in Multiversity, one of the characters was holding Action Comics number 9, which had that Superman in it. And then I read Action Comics in the beginning, but I didn't stick with it for very long. And I Google image search Action Comics number 9, and that was, like, that issue. So, I mean, and Grant Morrison wrote that as well, right? So is this going to, like, is it just like that character showed up for that one issue? Or
that Superman was definitely in that run of Action Comics. But then going back to Final Crisis again, I remember at the time, because it was when they were, like, President Obama was in, or President-elect Obama was in Amazing Spider-Man, and he was on the cover of Savage Dragon, and people were flipping out. But then in Final Crisis, around that same time, they were like, here's a black Superman who's also the president, and we're not saying it's him, but we're not saying it's not. And that's the character here from a different Earth who ended up coming in at the very end of Final Crisis during the big rush. So that's where he's coming from, both in Action Comics and in here, is from that issue of Final Crisis where Grant Morrison was just like, whatever.
So in Multiversity 2, we can expect us to see Obama.
Yeah, hopefully. So what do you think about, do you think DC would ever go back and say that Final Crisis and everything before the New 52 counts?
There's definitely stuff that counts. Like,
well, I mean, do you think they would ever be like, yes, all that happened?
I don't know.
It just gets me thinking, because, you know, all of a sudden this comes out and there's all this talk about Final Crisis and, like, all these people and these characters. So it just kind of seems like they're like, you know, maybe we'll just say that, like, New 52 is one of the universes. Like,
but or they could just do Multiversity, and then when it gets done, they'll be like, yeah, Grant Morrison, he's crazy, huh? Like, that boy, that was good. And then just, like, keep on going down this, like, path that they're already on. Because, I mean, I almost feel like Grant Morrison is, like, it's too much for a lot of people. Like, I mean, at what point is, like, somebody gonna, like, just buy this and just be like, man, this is not fun to read, you know? Like, I feel like you got to be into it.
But I think that there's a double-edged sword where, or not double-edged sword, but there's so many different ways of coming at it where you can say, like, okay, it's all these pieces of all these stories I've already read. I'm getting into it. Or the same way that you guys said you felt when you first started reading, where you're like, maybe I just don't understand it. Maybe it's really good and I don't understand it, so I'm going to stick with it. And then there are other people that just, you know, want it to fail no matter what it is, where they're just like, you know, it could be anything and it's not going to be what they want because comics aren't going in the direction that they want. So I think that there's a lot of different ways to come at it. And at what point do you say that's genius or that sucks? Because there are some people, you'll get people in the store at the same time that feel the same way about a book. And I guess when you come down to it, that's what's great about comics or America or life or whatever, where, you know, in the end it's what you enjoy that you're allowed to follow and that you can have that feeling about. And hopefully you're not somebody that's like, everything sucks all the time. And hopefully, you know, you do find those spots of joy and can get what you need out of it. And just everything isn't going to be for everyone, and Grant Morrison just happens to be more divisive when it comes to that than Geoff Johns, where Geoff Johns can write that story that everyone in theory can get what they want out of it or can get some degree of enjoyment out of it, as opposed to Grant Morrison.
As long as I can enjoy this and not go back and read Final Crisis, So far, one issue in, I'm good. I'm in for the next one.
Well, what I'm confused is I feel Grant like Morrison that's told us going, not to read it.
That's going all the way back to, well, that's the most confusing thing. Like, again, going to the marketing of it, like last week in Harley Quinn, and this is profiling people, but I wouldn't think most of the people that come in to read Harley Quinn would also want to read Multiversity. Like, if you were like, you can read one other DC book, it would be like Justice League or Batman or something like that, yeah. Not this. And the same thing with Infinity Man and Forever People, which I read this morning and had the like 6-page completely confusing Multiversity ad in the back of it. It's like, just put in a preview for Godland or Godhead that's going to be coming up and include new gods concepts. Like, why are you trying to push this to this person? But I'm not trying to stereotype anybody's interests either.
And they aren't either, apparently.
It's true. But I feel like that's also the statement you would have made the first time you were on the podcast to talk about AVX, where you're just like, I didn't really understand it all, but I'm in for the next issue. And
it was crazy what Namor did, huh?
Well, and that's, if it gets to the point to where like I read an issue and I don't know what the heck happened, then, or he just introduces too many characters where I just don't care anymore, then, you know, I'm going to be done. But
so I mean, I want to enjoy a DC book. So I feel like I'm going to stick with it. Like, I'm super selective of what I get now. Like, I don't get nearly as many books as I used to, but like, I really want to like this. And so like, I'm going to keep trying unless it just goes too far down the rabbit hole, I guess.
Well, I sold one extra book that I wouldn't have by having Rob on the podcast today. So mission accomplished. And I appreciate Rob coming on, especially since I skipped going to the gym this morning. So I was like,
I think he didn't want to do
I need to
workout.
Text him right now.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, I ran this morning. I ran this morning. By the way, when do you want to come do the podcast?
But I was thinking about that even when I was laying there. I was like, those front squats are too heavy. I don't want to. I want him to be on the podcast.
I could have been like, oh yeah, man. Well, I actually did this other podcast this morning, so I'm just gonna lay out.
And Riley, I appreciate you jumping back in too, even though it hasn't really been your Thursday bag lately to record.
Anytime.
You guys were more than adequate fill-ins for Jerome.
Yeah, I was really looking forward to being on here with Captain Retail, but I, like, you know, I understand Jerome's got a lot going on. And I don't think he likes me very much.
And in the meantime, you can find us online at facebook.com/acmegreensboro, on Tumblr at acmecomics.tumblr.com, and on Twitter at acmecomics. One of my projects this week has actually been to increase our internet presence, and I've taken us from 24% to 83% in just a few days. So you can see us from space now on the internet.
And you can find me on Twitter at Riley Till. I haven't tweeted in a while, but you can definitely follow me. And Instagram with the same username.
You can find me brewing cold brew coffee at outofstepcoffee.com or helping people get fit at Out of Step CrossFit, outofstepbarbell.com. And that is all that I do.
Well, if someone is interested in CrossFit, how can they try out a class?
I understand CrossFit can be a kind of intimidating thing to do, and we tend to do it a little differently. I always tell people I'm not athletic, but I figured out how to do this stuff, so I can teach it really well to people that have no clue what's going on. And for that reason, we offer a free class on Saturdays. Just if you want to try it out, no commitment, no charge, just come try it out on one Saturday. You do have to register online. It's just outofstepbarbell.com. You click on the class right on the front page that works for you, and just come try it out. Come watch Steven work out, lifting big weights.
If you can get up that early. You can find a brand new episode of Stuff Said with Greg Schiegel, and apparently a new podcast that he has in the works, at our website at acmewaveprojector.com. And you can find out our full list of upcoming events on our website at acmecomics.com. Anthony!